This is FSNN reporter MJ Del Valle in Tbilisi, Georgia. Free Speech Radio News has been an essential outlet for my stories from the Caucasus region, including in-depth looks at the recent Armenian presidential election, the creative ways protesters in Azerbaijan are using to fight for freedom of expression, and labor struggles in the Republic of Georgia. But FSRN, along with the voices of people struggling for dignity, equality, and human rights, could be silenced. Find out how can you support independent grassroots journalists at fsrn.org.
This is APNS Public Radio.
The opinions expressed in dispatches represent the analysis of the participating editors and may not necessarily reflect the group positions of the ANG or its public news wires.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. Papua New Guinea. You know, there are people who have heard about the mining issues down there, Freetown. You know, they've heard perhaps about resistance movements. I mean, there's been talk, you know, in terms of Indonesia about beheadings. Those of you who follow Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, her and her brother were actually present doing one of the major massacres in East Timor. And between, you know, East Timor and West Papua, you know, I'm saying this because I know this. There's a lot of confusion. You know, most people in North America, we really don't understand the geography over there. We don't understand the history there. We don't understand the politics. You know, it's just one of those things. Maybe when they're talking about Ferdinand Magellan or Columbus, it comes up. You know, Papua New Guinea is just not on the map for a lot of people in Canada and the United States. So we're going to speak to an activist today, Ronnie Kareni. He's reporting in today from Melbourne, Australia. And, you know, we also have A.K. Rockefeller, who's also coming in from somewhere in the PNG. You know, we're going to talk about some of the things, or at least I'm going to try to, you know, get the conversation to go into some of the things that are not really being discussed. You know, like number one, why is it that most people in North America, because I asked folks this morning over coffee, Papua New Guinea, no one knew what I was talking about. And the only opinions that they had were of cannibalism, right? A very short people, you know, who look African, right? You know, but they know it's not Africa, but, you know, they don't know what to think. They just, you know, these little black folks who just run around and make war and eat each other. That was all. And then there was talk about the Rockefeller boy who went missing. So, you know, it's, you know, a lot of it, of course, is popular culture, which we all know is crummy. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with just simple racism. And a lot of it has to do with just the general colonialist attitude that if there's not a dividend coming from Papua New Guinea just doesn't exist. And, you know, that's wrong because we have people that are fighting like hell for the indigenous folks of Papua New Guinea, and they're not getting very much recognition. Now, the other problem is, of course, when I speak to people in Australia, when I speak to people in New Zealand, when I speak to people in Britain, they are cognizant. And in Scotland, because Scotland may be independent soon, you know, they are conscious of what is happening in Papua New Guinea. A lot of that has to do with Benny Wender. He is a name that is known in most of the Anglophone speaking world, as I said, outside of North America. And, you know, does this have to do with the fact that Benny Wender was somehow, or maybe in some ways, somewhat sponsored by persons or entities known and unknown? And they make this particular individual the focus point. Not to say that Benny has not struggled, not to say that Benny does not represent the struggle. But, you know, we have another young man here who has gone through his own struggles, and he's, you know, again, reporting from Melbourne, Australia. Ronnie Kareni, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you.
You know, what do you want the people in, you know, and I should correct myself again, Occupy Canada and, you know, many occupied areas of the United States, you know, what is it that we should know about Papua New Guinea, and why do you think we don't know anything about Papua New Guinea and the struggle of the indigenous people there to maintain not just the, well, I mean, really, it's a fight for survival. But, you know, the idea of raising the flag in Papua New Guinea can give somebody, a very long prison sentence. When at the same time, we're talking about what's going on in the Ukraine and in the Crimea. And, brother, enlighten us on this issue.
Yeah, firstly, in the island where West Papua and Papua New Guinea comes from, West Papua is the western half of the island of New Guinea. And the indigenous people of West Papua are Melanesians. And they share the border with Papua New Guinea, which is an independent nation state that was gained its independence in 1975. And West Papua are ethnically the same like the people of Vanuatu, Torres Strait Islands in Australia, Fiji, also in Kanaky, which is a French colony until now. And they're going through the referendum process this year. But the people of West Papua are very friendly and caring. And West Papua is situated in the tropics, where it is the only place on the planet that where you find iceberg sitting on the 4,000 meter summit, like a mountain, where the icebergs are still there. And it is melting at a faster rate with the mining in the area that is close to that place. And so the mining has contributed to a lot of the environmental damage, but also the natural habitat to the land. And the indigenous people, their land has been taken away from them through the mining and also the foreign investments coming into the region. But geographically, the West Papua has been the place where during the World War II, it helps the Australian Army with its U.S. Allied forces to stop the Japanese from entering down to the Pacific region. And so the Papuans have been there to help during the World War II. And that hasn't been even mentioned a lot in the history books of the U.S. or even the Australian history books. But those who engaged in the World War II, they know. And a lot of the people, like especially the soldiers who engaged in early 1940s, they even fly the planes to stop in one of the beautiful islands of West Papua. It's just off the mainland called Biak. And Biak Island is where a lot of the planes come in and then they refill and then fly out again. And that has been also a stopping point for a lot of the commercial flights when coming from the U.S. and to Hawaii and then to Biak and then continue its journey to the Europe. But West Papua was very much a Dutch colony in the 60s, leading up until in 1963, when Indonesia illegally, through its military, occupied West Papua on the 1st of May 1963. Through an agreement that would happen in a year before that, in 1962, and that was based in New York. And that agreement did not consult the indigenous people of West Papua. And basically, it was just an agreement already signed, and they just came and then allowed Indonesia to take over West Papua. And 7 years later, a sham referendum was organized, and it was in 69, where they only hand-selected, when I said they, it's the UN temporary administration gave the power to the Indonesian government through Australia and US support, and only 1,026 West Papuan indigenous and church leaders were handpicked and taken into a small space where the situation, it was a dangerous condition, where they were forced to vote whether they want to be part of the of Indonesia or they wanted to separate. And of course, when you are at the gunpoint and you being verbally and physically being abused, you can't say no to at that time. And so West Papua was very much at that time, a lot of the indigenous leaders said it, we have no choice. It was called act of free choice. But for the indigenous people of West Papua, it's act of no choice. And that is the darkest history until now that Papua has been going through. And that hasn't been mentioned out there. Academics have researched and find out. And politicians and foreign governments know that the UN, through its Western allies, the US, the Australian government, the UK government, they know that they had made a mistake. And it was a political error that has very much put West Papua into the situation where we still, until now, still fighting for our rights to determine our future.
Yeah, AK Rockefeller, let me bring you in here at this point, because, you know, the role of capitalism in terms of the mining interests and the other strategic, perhaps military interests in terms of Indonesia, in terms of the support for a particular special forces unit that I believe was trained by the U.S., Kupasu, so am I correct about that? Mm-hmm. You know, could you tie in a lot of this in terms of what Ronnie is discussing, that why we may have been shielded from a lot of this information? In terms of the ownership of the mining firms, you know, concern?
Absolutely. Yeah, the U.S. played a pretty pivotal role, actually, in setting up that agreement that handed West Papua over to the Indonesians. Henry Kissinger actually brokered the deal, and the driving economic force behind that is the Freeport McMoRan Mining Company, which had an interest in exploiting the gold deposits in West Papua, and started the world's largest gold mine in Grasberg. And really it was that economic interest with a lot of Rockefeller backing also, in fact, that was the driving force for the U.S.'s role in brokering that deal and allowing Indonesia to occupy West Papua. And to this day, that Freeport McMoRan runs the world's largest gold mine in West Papua, and they also export quite a bit of copper.
In terms of the commercial interests, you know, in terms of the mineral mining and what have you, how does this relate to U.S. support for this particular special forces unit that I'm talking about? You know, what is their relation to this?
Well, again, it's companies like Freeport McMoRan being the biggest, and the variety of other U.S. and U.K. and Australian companies that exploit natural resources in West Papua really are lobbying on behalf of the Indonesian government and military to maintain that occupation, because they profit quite a bit from it, as does Indonesia. In fact, one-fifth of Indonesia's tax base comes from Freeport McMoRan and their gold mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also just to add on that, as the largest taxpayer, but also the Freeport McMoRan pay the security forces, including the police, the DNI, the military, and Kopassus, to look after the mine site. And therefore, if the indigenous or the local owners are coming to express their disappointment with the environmental hazards or their land grabs and all this, then the military will face the local people. So in the end, the mining gets away with what they do on the ground, whereas then the human rights abuses happens, and at the expense of the local indigenous people who faces the loss of their natural habitat, their land rights, and everything.
What is the official position of the UK government in regards to West Papua?
The UK government has very much aligned itself with the US and the Australian government that the special autonomy, which the Indonesia thinks that it is the best solution for Papuans, which it's not. But they aligned themselves and thinking that the special autonomy law number 21, which was introduced in 2001, is the best solution for the Papuans. But after 10 years, that special autonomy law has failed the people of West Papua. There hasn't been any developments on the ground. There hasn't been the people, especially the local people who are in the tribal village, who are living in a very remote area, they are not benefiting from this so-called special autonomy. Instead, it's only the elites, and especially the Indonesian officials who make the decisions in Jakarta, and those decisions are not implemented on the ground in West Papua. And so we see that a lot of those money just being pocketed by individual officials. And so that's their belief, this belief of the UK and the US and the Australian governments, thinking that, oh, the special autonomy will help to meet the demands or the issues that the Papuans are calling, in which they're saying that it's an economic and social issue. But the reality is that the issue in West Papua, it's the political status, where the right of the Papuans have been deprived the way back in the history with the occupation and the sham referendum. And this is what the Papuans, through the leaders and even like Benny Wenda in UK, Herman Wangai, who is a new uprising leader, who is now in Washington DC and lobbied through the UN, as well as some of the pioneers, the leaders, are calling for the UN, and especially through the US and the Australian and the UK government, to review that act of no choice in 1969. So that is basically what the Papuans are calling as well, and giving that referendum, giving that opportunity so the Papuans could decide and determine their own future.
Well, you know, let me ask you both, and either of you can jump in. You know, what is the status right now in terms of international recognition for an independent Papua New Guinea state? I mean, I know that's what Benny Wenda has argued for. Philippe, if I'm pronouncing his name correct, Karma. I believe that's also what he has advocated and has, you know, basically paid a serious price for. And, you know, you have your struggle with this. You know, what is the status, if any, for, you know, UN international recognition of a free, independent, you know, PNG state? And would it be rational maybe to say bypass the UN and the standard Eurocentric base, for the most part, international scheme, and simply go to other indigenous nations and seek recognition from them? Would that be an avenue that you think the people of Papua New Guinea might consider?
Yes, that's definitely the pathway now that is in the process. And this goes back since 2011. There was a third Papuan People's Congress. And the third Papuan People's Congress declared a nation state or a transitional government in ready for direct negotiations with Jakarta or any third party. And basically, this is in a working progress through its cohesive and comprehensive administration at work. And the leadership who were elected or declared were imprisoned. And that was Fokorus Yaboysenbut and Edison Waromi, who were, Fokorus was elected as the president and Edison Waromi as the prime minister-elect. And now the leadership are calling for Indonesia that the Indonesian government should recognize that transitional government so that there is a negotiation on behalf of the people of West Papua with the Indonesian government through a third party. And so far until now, only country in the Melanesia region is Vanuatu, and other ethnically and indigenous people here in Melanesia, they're the only country now that came out. And recently, the Prime Minister have made public appeals at the UN General Assembly last year and earlier, or late last month, at the Human Rights Summit in Geneva. And so that is basically now the pathway that the recognition of the transitional government called the Federal Republic of West Papua. And the Vanuatu government have now bringing, they're planning for a West Papua symposium coming up sometime this year, middle this year to end of this year, to call on the indigenous leaders, that they even the independence leaders of West Papua, including Benny Wenda and who, the other diplomats, so to find a pathway that the Vanuatu government will further take the issue of West Papua and start lobbying the other indigenous countries around the world, especially who believes in the human rights, but also the indigenous rights of the people. And so that is happening now, and it is going to be a positive step that Indonesia should, when they elect a new president, whoever is going to be the new president after 9th of July, will have to also come to the table and sit with the leadership of West Papua and find a middle way forward.
Okay, so, you know, A.K. Rockefeller, you know, let me ask you, you know, what is it that, you know, people in the West, you know, can do in terms of, you know, first educating themselves about this issue? Because, you know, we're seeing that there's an information gap. Australia and New Zealand are conscious. Britain and Scotland are conscious. You know, what's going on in Canada and the U.S. that, you know, when you say Papua New Guinea, all people think of is cannibalism?
Well, one thing that we can do is to focus on the role of the U.S. in particular in this issue. And we can try to put pressure on the U.S. government to look into the activities of Freeport-McMoRan and also address some of our military connections to Indonesia. You mentioned, for example, Kapasis. The U.S., for a large part, funded and trained Kapasis as a special forces unit to fight terrorism. But they've also been heavily involved in suppressing Papuan activists and the Papuan separatist movement, and also involved in pretty terrible human rights abuses there. In addition, the U.S. is involved in also arming the Indonesian military, and even very recently brokered a deal between Boeing and the Indonesian military to sell them a bunch of Apache helicopters. And a lot of this sort of military assistance comes from the U.S. and from other Western countries. And that's something, you know, we can address here to look at our role in the issue.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what is the particular stance, you know, from your your analysis of the Obama administration in terms of what's happening? They cannot be ignorant to the human rights abuses that are going on there.
No, Obama even grew up in Indonesia, so he's probably well aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, his role has been the same as previous presidents, previous administrations, which is to support Indonesia's territorial sovereignty, I guess they call it, which includes this illegal occupation of West Papua. And, you know, we have a lot of economic and political ties to Indonesia. I think the U.S. Regards Indonesia as a possible ally in the region against the Chinese, or, you know, to balance the power of China. Mm-hmm. And so it's quite difficult to get the U.S. government to actually take a stand on this issue. So they might say something, and there were a number of congressmen who did actually speak out on the issue a year or two ago. but it didn't lead to any substantive action, really.
You know, I mean, one of the things I suppose I want to raise is because, you know, folks are going to ask this, especially people who consider themselves to be progressive. They also, let me say it this way, people who are progressive tend to see themselves as being on the left. And, you know, Ronnie, you're going to be appearing at the Marxism 2014 conference. And, you know, what is the importance of your appearance there in terms of, you know, what are you going to bring to the Marxism conference that is going to relate to classic Marxist philosophy in terms of the struggle being an indigenous one and not necessarily a worker's struggle that's taking place in the PNG?
Yeah, it's very interesting because this also reflects back last year when we had this campaign called the Freedom Flotilla to West Papua, and basically to challenge both the Australia and the Indonesian government. By the action itself, they was focused on reconnecting the indigenous land and the story and the people. And so based on that, we travel around Australia and collecting the, and went to the sacred sites, places, and collecting the ashes from the fire and the water. Was believed through the Dreamtime stories from the Aboriginal people that it came from the north, from New Guinea, and it springs up in the middle of Australia in Lake Eyre. And so we're taking that and through that trip to go back up to West Papua. So that is one of the action in itself that, you know, as a Freedom Flotilla, but it's connecting the indigenous land and the story to challenge this system, to challenge the government, the current government of Indonesia and Australia. And so that is the angle and the focus where West Papua struggle is coming to be advocated and will be also talked about at this Marxism conference. And so, you know, here I just want to emphasize more, it's the struggle of the indigenous people, and it's how we wanted to reconnect the land and the people. And so it's also about challenging the governments of today, that, you know, a lot of policies that they come out and put boundary and stops people and makes it the lives of the people very hard. And it's like looking at places around, like not only in West Papua, but also in Papua New Guinea, the independent nation already. The people, even though it's already being independent for the last 30 years, but a lot of the policies there are very much unjust, and it has really forced people into desperation. And, you know, when they're desperate, they act and they do desperate measures that has somehow will create more problems to the society. And, you know, when we look at the Middle East issues around those areas and why people have fled, a push factor that caused influx of refugees to other countries, like over 1 million already people from Syria into Lebanon. And it's shocking, and there's no support of those people, especially the practical support that the people really wants on the ground. And so basically, yeah, relating back to this, the upcoming conference, and especially looking on the indigenous struggle, and this is one thing that the indigenous people of Australia, especially the Aboriginal and the Torres Strait Islanders, have come together and realizing that, yes, we are one people, we share the one land. And it's through the colonization and then through the ice melt, and it has separated us. But in the spirit, we are still one. And we shared one Dreamtime story. We share one land and the people and the cultures. And so, yeah, that is one thing that has really inspired me as a young generation to continue this, continue to maintain and sustain what is very much authentic to the indigenous people.
You know, it's a lot of information, you know, because folks are so, you know, in the West now, you know, I'm speaking, you know, strictly about, you know, people in the Anglophone world, you know, we're so used to discussing what are supposed to be the important nations or the important peoples, perhaps, you know, who have a political you know, weight to them at a particular time, you know, in history. Whereas the scenes with Papua, it's, you know, forgotten in so many ways. And, you know, AK, you know, if you can for a moment, you know, relate the story of the Rockefeller family member who went missing and how this may imply, you know, North American attitudes on whether or not they take this seriously. And for background on this, what I'm trying to point to is that we have a really serious issue going on right now with the Redskins, the team name, specifically right now with the team name of the main professional team in the National Football League in the U.S. and how they come, you know, the argument has gotten to be very, very twisted because we have an anachronism in terms of a caricature of, you know, indigenous people who are native to North America. And this caricature we all know is insulting. We all know is racialist on several levels, several different levels. And, you know, we're still having a debate on whether or not it's free speech, if it's this or if it's that. And, there, you know, having that up there for many of us who consider ourselves to be politicized or political indigenous people, to be self-aware indigenous people, we realize that when people see Redskins or hear Redskins and the fact that that can still be used as a moniker affects us politically when we're trying to negotiate for what we understand to be ours and, you know, by ancestral right and what we understand our civil and human rights are within the modern political and social sphere. So, you know, how does that relate? You know, because people who really don't know anything at all about the Rockefeller family, when I did mention Papua, you know, New Guinea this morning, they were able to cite this missing family member, even though they knew no of the details other than, you know, the story that's been bandied about what happened to him.
Well, do you want me to tell the story? Or?
Well, yeah, I mean, because a lot of folks are not aware of the story itself, you know.
Michael Rockefeller was interested in art from West Papua, from the Azmat region in particular. His father, Nelson Rockefeller, set up a museum of so-called primitive art in New York that got him interested in this. And he tagged along on an expedition to West Papua to try to trade for indigenous artwork. And he was on a boat with a Dutch anthropologist trying to go through a river delta, which was quite rough, and the boat tipped over and they were stranded there for quite a while. And at some point Michael Rockefeller decided to swim to shore and then was never heard from again. And you know, there have been a lot of different interpretations of the story, or you know, different stories that of what might have happened to him. There's actually a book that just came out in March that gives quite an in-depth study of that history. And it was believed for the most part that he was killed and eaten by a local tribe there. The book, I believe, mainly confirms that or presents a lot of evidence for that. But the reason why that happened actually was because there had been a particularly brutal raid by the Dutch authorities on a couple of the villages in that area, and they actually killed many, if not most, of the important elders from the tribe, two villages there. And it was really as a result of that they likely would have killed Michael Rockefeller. But what's interesting about the story, I guess, is that while he, you know, what he was doing himself was perhaps, you know, fairly reasonable, just trying to bring the art and culture of that region to people in the West and expose us to that. The reason why he was able to go was actually because of his membership in one of the world's richest families. Mm-hmm. And the family was instrumental in setting up the theft of West Papua's natural resources. So he's really he represents the story, and Michael Rockefeller, we represent the relatively good and the relatively terrible side of our engagement with that culture. And, you know, it's similar to our engagement in the West with a lot of different indigenous cultures around the world.
So, you know, Ronnie, you know, what can we do to help you? You know, what can those of us in the indigenous world do to help the people of Papua New Guinea? And at the same time, by strengthening your struggle, helping ourselves as, you know, people of the fourth world, you know, unify, you know, politically and socially, so that, you know, we can get it together and, you know, survive this 21st century.
Yeah, that's the question that I've been asked by lots of, you know, sympathizers of the, you know, different struggles. And one thing that I've always felt that, you know, we can try to, you know, build and pressure the governments of the day, like whether it's the US government or Canada government or Australian government. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we wanted to build a better future for the society in the world, you know, like in West Papua, it's that we have to also invest, you know, on one hand, the Papuans calling for freedom and, you know, giving them that, you know, the opportunity to determine their future. But at the same time, it's a nation building process. And, you know, it's the question from the UN, the US, you know, what's going to happen? Will in West Papua will be like South Sudan? Will West Papua will be like Timor-Leste? And so these are the questions that, you know, the Western governments will ask. And for me, what, you know, I wanted to see for the struggle of West Papua is, on one, we build and we share stories, build solidarity and share stories, like, you know, like now we're talking. But at the same time, you know, people who have the skills, and this is to the broader audience and whoever, you know, that you've got the skills in media and you know you can train someone in media's industry, then, you know, I'm calling for you to help the Papuans who are on the ground, and especially they've been faced with military repression. Like last week in itself, we had this global solidarity action that happened that calls for the release of the political prisoners. And we have some of the witnesses on the ground writing the account of what happened and sending us the information, but with no skills in that, you know, they need like cameras, they need where they can, you know, take photos, but also the technology that how they can send us information in real time, and to know all the techniques involving, you know, telling a story. And so, you know, I'm calling if anyone in the media who's got the skills to help, then, you know, it's one avenue that you could help in investing for citizen or safe witness journalism in West Papua. And that's one example, but there is other areas that we could explore as well. And, you know, in that process, we are also not only supporting, like, you know, what the issue of the day, but we are investing as well in a nation building process. And that could be vice versa. We could bring a West Papuan to the part of, like, to the US or to Canada, the North American side of the world, to tell the story, engage, and to somehow build on the music, because that's what I do as well, music through the Rise of the Morning Star campaign. That's what I do, and trying to bring West Papuan musicians to engage with other indigenous musicians, like here in this part of the world, in Australia. That's what I've been engaging, the music with the indigenous people here and through Papua New Guinea to Vanuatu. And recently we've just been to New Zealand and engaged with the Maori people there, and the local people there. So that's on a indigenous and very much on that level, but using music as well to go with it, and very much to engage people to win their hearts and souls. And that is, you know, for me, that's what I'm looking at, you know, how people could help. It comes back to the capacity of whoever who is listening, that, you know, if they've got the skills in maybe in health and how they can support the people in remote areas in West Papua to have a first aid kit, and how they could you know, deal with that. And that's, you know, that's a big step for someone in West Papua. But at the same time, the growing support for the West Papuan movement, the support, it's slowly coming out there, and people beginning to hear about what's happening in West Papua, and with great works like Benny Wenda's doing in UK with Free West Papua campaign, and some of us here based here in Australia, and we're building this awareness as well with the indigenous people here in Australia, but also the wider community. And we will continue to do that. And, you know, with the social media, you know, people can just follow the campaign, like Free West Papua campaign in UK, and Rise of the Morning Star. It's Rise with the letter Z. We've got Facebook, we've got a website, and people could follow that and follow the stories and updates. And also, if they're more interested to write for, you know, events that are happening in West Papua, they can check out westpapuamedia.info. And, you know, we need people to help in, you know, writing and updates on what's happening, and translating as well. And that is one big demand as well, because that will help to educate more people to know what's happening in West Papua.
Okay. And AK Rockefeller, the information, how can people find out what you're doing?
I would second what Ronnie said. You know, we in the U.S. and in Canada, we have you know, great access to the internet. We have a lot more resources to produce media, to produce music, in support of these kinds of human rights causes, in particular West Papua. I would say, you know, that's essentially what I've been doing. People I work with on akrockefeller.com, producing music and art to spread the message about what's going on in West Papua, and amplify that through social media.
Okay, and you know, you can find both of these men on Twitter. That's how I ran into them. AK Rockefeller, of course, you can find that at AK Rockefeller. And, you know, our guest, Ronnie Kareny, you can find him at Ronnie Kareny on Twitter. And, you know, let me remind you again, he mentioned the site, and I want you to go check it out. You can see what he's doing. Rise of the Morning Star, as he said, spelled with Z, riseofthemorningstar.com, one word, and akrockefeller.com. So this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I hope you learned something here. Because, you know, I was pretty dismayed myself with myself this morning that, you know, even though I consider myself to be pretty informed, that, you know, even though I'm conscious of what's happening there, I still didn't know, you know, nearly enough. You know, there's so much that's going on down there. You know, I mean, there's so much that we can talk about in terms of the various invasions from Indonesia that we really didn't get into. You know, because I really want, you know, I really wanted the brother to talk about what's happening right now. But, you know, we could have sat here for 6-8 hours and discussed the human rights situation and just how serious it is. But, you know, I want you to take what, you know, this brother said and, you know, go out there and do what I did, you know, do more research, you know, sit there and try to figure it out. And again, try what I tried this morning. You know, sit when you're talking to people. You know, just about all the other issues we talk about here. Ask your neighbors. Speak to the people that you know. You know, and let's just try to do this and try to do it righteously. So, you know, thank you, gentlemen, for being on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
You are listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the Fourth World.
In West Papua, there is no freedom, only killing or intimidation, torture.
Sedang tertindas, kita juga bisa bebas dari negara pinggitan dalam waktu dekat ini.